Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Terribly hard on yourself.
You don't know, Robert. You don't know. They took everything I was. They used me to kill and to destroy, and I couldn't stop them. I shouldn't have been able to stop them. I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't good enough. I should have been able to stop them. I should.
So, my brother is a human being after all.
Hello.
Hi.
And welcome.
Welcome
to... The It's Got Star Trek. Are we doing one of those improv games? Because I think in the improv game, the idea is that you don't both know ahead of time what the word is. You know, where you're like saying
I didn't say we were doing an improv game.
No, I didn't say that you were. You said that
you invented
I was
a game.
Asking
you
it.
Invented a game we weren't doing, and then you said we weren't playing by the rules of this game weren't playing.
You have assumed a great deal here, Dan.
You said, are we playing that improv game? Because when you play the improv game, you're not supposed to know what they're saying.
Yeah.
And I never claimed that I was playing an improv game.
Nor did I at any point claim that you claimed that. I was asking sincerely.
The implication was that you thought we were.
It saddens me that is the default implication.
Then why did you specifically pick improv game?
Because it sounded like... Okay,
yeah,
let
so
me
there,
back up.
There was an implication.
No.
There was, because it sounded like an improv
please,
game to you.
Please, let me...
It sounded like an improv. You would just admit it.
I'm forced to defend myself here because I asked you the question. I didn't accuse you. I was simply asking.
I didn't say you accused me. There was an implication of you thought it was something.
Exactly, because it sounded like what we were doing was the improv game where the gag is that people are they claim to like know a saying or a motto or a song lyric that doesn't exist. And then the joke is like, okay, sing it together. And then so they have to kind of look at each other and be like, well, everyone knows that. And then they say it at the same time. And it's funny because they don't quite get it right. Right.
But you were wondering if we were playing that game, but then you were berating me for not following the rules of that game.
Now it's been elevated to berated.
And you were like, but we're not following the rules of the game. And I was like, that was never my intention. Right. Well, you've been watching too much pattern game.
Pattern game.
Too much do the thing.
What are you talking
Taskmaster.
About?
Taskmaster.
Well, Taskmaster is not about like doing the thing.
Taskmaster is all about everyone doing things.
Well, I mean, they are doing things, but anyway, okay. We're letting this get away from us.
Yeah.
See, this is
we
the
got.
Problem.
Oh, we almost we missed it by one word. We almost got through the opening.
Missed it by that much.
Yeah.
That's the second biggest aspirin I've seen this month. Mm-hmm. That's a Maxwell Smart joke. Any of you kids out there know about Maxwell Smart? You know about Maxwell Smart.
The cone of silence.
Yeah, cone of silence. Yeah. And the Agent 99.
Mm-hmm. Not.
The Agent 69.
Bang, bang, Maxwell, silver hammer going down.
I don't know what that
is. Bang, bang, Maxwell. It's that Beatles song from the White Album.
I really, I don't know why I'm not remembering them. Maybe it's a Mandela thing.
Wait a sec.
Okay. No, I believe you. You are much more
silver hammer,
much better versed.
I'm trying to
music, especially rock and roll music.
Well, I'm just trying to remember the name of the song.
The Beatles. Okay. We didn't finish the welcome. So you ready to click? I don't want you to like freak out when I finish the sentence, because I want you to play the sound effects the way you want to play it.
Well, now everyone knows that we're going to be playing a sound.
Wow, most people know that already.
Oh, I think it's just called Maxwell's Silver Hammer. I guess that's just what it's called. Maxwell's. Oh. It's on the White Album.
All right, I'm quite sincerely going to look that up, because I don't know why I listened to the White Album. But something's not sticking out.
It's a very
about
interesting
that.
Album.
Yeah, it is. All right, so you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'll leave it to you.
Right. Hello and welcome to...
I just had to do one.
I don't mind. You can play along.
It's okay. It's okay.
Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Mommy, he's here.
So, you arrived at last.
I am glad you are here.
Welcome home, Captain.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
And we here and the audience at home are free to interpret why and how Dan curated those sound clips precisely.
There's great mystery here.
I don't think there's a mystery, but there is intentionality. I'm highlighting the fact that Dan does not merely randomly and haphazardly clip and then organize and play sound clips. You play it with intention.
Yes, but the way you present it, you make it sound like it's a puzzle people need to solve.
No. It's not a puzzle. It's an example of the type of art. It's the best type of art.
No.
In my book, that type of art that...
No.
That is so natural. It's so comfortable. It's like a sexy little blanket. And memory foam or whatever analogy
it's like that
best.
Sexy shirt Picard was wearing
I have in my notes Picard's sexy tunic where I was like, is it a sweater, is it a fabric, I don't know,
but it was
it's tucked in,
it was sexy and
super sexy,
and it looked damn comfortable.
It looked extremely comfortable. Yeah. It looked like it was specifically designed for a potential partner or more than one potential partner simultaneously to have easy access to the Picard's breasts and nipples. Right?
Yeah.
And that's something I can appreciate.
I can.
It's polite. Mm-hmm. And for everybody involved, you don't want to get tangled up in all that silly uniform nonsense.
Admit it.
Okay. So we welcomed... Dan is such a good artist that sometimes it sounds like it's not as it's easy. I'm saying you make it look easy, and that's the best kind of art when it looks easy and it's not easy.
I just played a bunch of sounds that were saying like, "Mommy, he's here. You've arrived. I'm glad you're here. Welcome home." Like we're starting podcast.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
I enjoy that. I just like occasionally highlight it because I think sometimes people aren't given the credit they really ought to be given.
Sure, Chief.
Yeah. This is episode 348 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And on this episode, we will be discussing the TNG episode, the Next Generation episode, season 4, episode 2, and it is titled in the great tradition of later tradition of Voyager and Enterprise, not too much Deep Space Nine. It's got one of those one word titles.
Mm-hmm.
It just puts it all in just like one thing, some quotation marks and one fucking word.
Yes, and that word,
that word, sir, sirs and madams, everyone out there, all peoples. That word is family.
I know who you are.
A highwayman.
A what?
Look, I'm better.
Sally.
Now I have to admit something there. I'm always like, you make it seem like I'm playing the most confusing shit that it makes perfect sense. This one didn't make a ton of sense.
Okay.
This one did not make a ton of sense. I just liked how they all like went together.
I just don't. Okay. All right. I know I'm taking a risk here. I didn't want to skip over your pretty intense accusation because you're like, I know you're always like, it's bullshit, it's crazy nonsense.
No, I didn't say it's crazy shit. No, I said, you misheard me because that's not at all what I said. I know that I'm always saying that the sounds that I play make perfect sense. I'm always like, there's no mystery here. It's very straightforward. Everything is very easy to digest and understand. Mm-hmm. And normally that's true. And it's funny that we had this discussion today because that that rule did not apply for what I just played. Yeah. What I just played didn't really...
It was more non-secretory-ish.
It's less in the secretorial, yeah. Yes. In secretorial yeah. land than
it,
not.
It, it's more. It's leaning more towards it does not follow.
But I just liked how they...
less towards it does indeed follow.
But I just liked how all the sounds like sounded together.
Yeah. I mean, I like that too.
And it does make some amount of sense, just not a lot.
Sure. Good.
Anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Astute listeners out there.
Oh, yes.
may have noticed that Jesse's not with us this evening. He, I believe, still remains with us on planet Earth or mm-hmm. Terra. But he is on vacation. He and I and others were in at the beach for a bit. I came home, met up with Dan, and now we're recording a podcast. And Jesse's having a good old time. Do you recall where Jesse's having a good time at, Dan?
The graves of my ancestors.
Okay, so Dan gets extra credit there for playing. I was expecting a different sound clip, and the sound clip he played caught me off guard and was hilarious.
North Cackalack.
There you go. That's what I thought. I thought he was going to say yes. Jesse is currently in, as he would put it, North Cackalacky.
You holdin'?
Which is a euphemism, a colloquialism, I don't know. It's a different way to say North Carolina.
Are we going to talk about bloodline?
Dan is playing some clips from when Dan was out of town, and Jesse and I made the error of thinking it would be fun to talk about alcohol in Star Trek while drinking alcohol in real life, and then
blew one out,
producing a completely ridiculous podcast.
Blew one out,
winking out.
It's called like Trek.
Blew one out.
Trek.
Winking out.
Trek and booze.
Blew one out.
Go
winking out.
Go check it out and enjoy.
Blew one out.
Winking out.
So yeah,
blew one out.
Just winking not
out
here this week.
Blew one out.
Winking out.
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 I'm not editing it around any of that, by the way. Just so you know, audience. That's
there should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life.
Have
there should be room
it
for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life. There should
it
be room for both in this
check
life.
Check this out. This actually is not only like an accidental beat, but he's singing. If you listen to it, listen to this.
There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life.
There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life.
There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life.
There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life.
There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life.
I agree that it is.
Isn't that crazy?
It is a lyrical, rhythmic sound clip. I like it.
I
don't think he's singing.
No, I'm not saying he's singing. He's not singing in on purpose.
Oh,
but if you listen, if you play it enough, everything, every time we say something, every time we talk, we are essentially singing at all times.
Okay.
Everything we do has a pitch, and sometimes those pitches sound atonal. Sometimes, like in this example, you can hear him go, "There should be room in both this life. There should be room in both this life." Listen. Mm.
There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life. There should be room for both in this life.
You don't hear it?
Here's my formal response, Dan. My formal response.
I played it too many times.
No. I mean, yes, but I've lost that war long ago.
He's joking.
I 100% agree with you that because of you playing that and then saying that, I do now hear that.
Mm-hmm.
However, I will include the caveat, not 100% that is true. I will include the caveat that this could be one of those tricky neurological priming things.
No, it's
where
you've
tricked me into hallucinating.
There's no trick.
I hope there isn't, honestly. I hope there isn't.
There's no trick. It's just, I mean, all sound has a pitch. Every sound has a pitch. It just so happens this one like fell into like an audibly like a Western scale pitch.
Okay.
series of pitches, I should say. It was in a key.
I don't know nothing about baseball.
A deer, a female deer, Ray, a drop of golden sun.
1, 2, 3, 5, 3,
my name, I call myself. Fa, a long, long way to run. That will bring us back to Do.
And so it goes, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, Do, Re, Mi, Sol,
So, La, Fa, Mi, Re, Do.
Do, Re, Mi, So, Mi, Re, Do, Re, Me, So, Do, Re, Mi, So, Mi, Re, Do, 1, 2, 3, 5, 3, 2, 1.
Good.
Good. Let the hate flow through you.
Befoist.
Oh, no, I forgot he has sound clips of me being an asshole.
Eggs are part of things.
Yeah. All right. We'll get moving right along here. All right, we're discussing family.
And nobody...
I always like talking about a hilarious episode of TNG. It's always fun to... For like when you got like a real comedy.
By the way, nobody told me that Jesse was going to be out tonight, so I'm learning this right along with the audience.
All right, so there you go.
But this has a sort of the classic, this is like an inconsequential episode. When I say inconsequential, I don't mean it's like worthless by any means. I think this is a really good episode. I think it's a fantastic episode, actually. It just doesn't like have any space consequence, you know? And you can tell because it has like that type of opening. They're not like, going on leave for some much needed rest, but what they are doing is they're fixing their ship. So it's essentially the same thing. They're fixing their ship with that fucking spider space station. Creepy ass fucking because there's the ship's getting fixed, they gotta like kill some time, and that means they just have a little side quest, a personal side quest. And this was about family. It was like Worf and his parents, you know, Jean-Luc and his brother, and then like Beverly and Wesley and their dead dad slash husband.
Yeah. I was like, halfway through this episode, I was like, hey, you know what? I put in my nose. I was like, you know, each of these storylines, in one way or the other, addresses topics related to family. Pretty cool. And you know the
episode? Sure, you misunderstood.
You know the episode after this? The episode after this is Brothers!
Oh, shit.
When Data and Lore get up to some business, and then there's...
Amazing.
And Dr. Sung and stuff. So there's a lot of family stuff going on. Now, a couple
now
things.
There is something I'd like to see.
To set the scene, right? To set the scene, this episode immediately follows the conclusion to The Best of Both Worlds. Which
much relief, sir.
What was that? You know, like the... oh man, shit! I won't even think about it because you know, I'm sorry. There was something that sounded very similar to that. Anyway, so season 3 finale.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry about it. It's just a bunch of nonsense gibberish that would.
I hate it when you do that.
It would have made sense if I could remember the reference, but I can't. So, you know, we've already done a bunch of singing and other nonsense. So.
Good lord!
So season 3 ended with. Captain Picard, captured by the Borg, turned into Locutus of Borg.
Interesting.
They were using his mind and brain powers to murder all these people.
Interesting.
And season 3 concluded with Riker ordering the Enterprise to fire on the Borg cube that had Captain Picard on it. Right?
Injuries are healing.
Yes. So, the second episode, not quite as exciting as the first episode, but the season 4 premiere concludes that story, and that's action-packed, etc. This storyline was making a lot of people nervous, a lot of the producers and stuff, because of exactly what Dan's saying. There's no sci-fi anything in here, right? There's no, like the plot isn't driven by, like, some sci-fi contrivance causing, you know, like, having to solve some problem.
Too bad. I rather enjoyed the idea.
There's no real action. It's purely 100% a character-driven drama piece. And on top of that, it does the very rare thing in Star Trek up to this point, where normally Star Trek likes to just do the reset button. And this is one of the first, and certainly I think one of the most significant times they were like, no, obviously Captain Picard is going to have some trauma as a result of this.
They jumped at the prospect.
We have to have some sort of transition, some sort of explanation of how he can just like kind of go back to being Captain Picard. So this episode is helpful in that regard. And that's why I would push back slightly. I know you didn't mean this, Dan, but I wouldn't call it inconsequential in purely for the fact that it's that it gives us that space to believe the storyline.
And when I say inconsequential, I don't by any means mean it's to be disregarded. Yeah. I don't mean that at all. I think this is a fantastic episode. I think there's a lot of amazing things about this episode. When I say inconsequential, I really just mean in reference to what, like, the story of, like, what usual kind of Star Trek stuff we... It's sort of like... Maybe I should say it's more of like a... It's like recess. It's like a field day. It's like
I think it's better.
It's a little vacation or something.
The reason why I say... I push back specifically on that inconsequential is because that would mean like, oh, you could remove this episode and it wouldn't affect the Picard storyline, whereas you can't. You need this for later Picard stuff. And also, when you're watching this and you're like... And then little Renee at the end is all like, one day I'll go to my own starship. It's like, uh-oh, you haven't... This kid hasn't seen Generations.
Yeah. He's my number one dad.
Yeah, and it's the same actor who got to play shrunken down kid Picard.
It's David Tristan Birkin.
Tristan, that's right.
I think he's still, he's in some kind of stuff later on.
Yeah.
I think inconsequential might have been an inappropriate word to use.
I'm a semantic silly boy.
But on the other hand, though, I would argue that I don't think you have to have this episode. I think Star Trek is the better for having this episode. Mm-hmm. I think they could have completely ignored his trauma and just moved on, and like people would have like been okay with it. I think it would have been I think it would have been folly. I think it's important that they included it.
Sure, you're right in that sense, but also then we wouldn't have had so many storylines that call back specifically to this episode, not only in TNG, a couple go back to his vineyard and stuff, like All Good Things and a few others, but also all of Picard, right? All of Picard is hearkening back to this exact thing, because mm-hmm. Picard in this story is all about, like, you know, he comes home to heal. That's the only time he comes home. And then in the Picard timeline, it's because he got kind of like kicked out of Starfleet, basically. So he's like now back hanging out and wounded again. Right?
All right, good.
All right. How
very
about
good,
this?
Fine.
I did want to ask you, Dan, quick, because we didn't do any of our front matter yet, and I wanted to check: do we have any Dan's bits? You know,
we have two duty or no duties.
Okay, good. Some duty or no duties.
I made a list of all the times Robert was a dick.
Did you notice? You know, so folks at home who don't know, Dan also has an elder brother named Robert.
Yeah, I do.
Except he goes by. Believe Robert or Robert. Rob or Robbie. How did that affect your viewing of this episode?
I was going to say, Marie, at one point, she was all like, you are part of the family, Jean-Luc Picard. Yeah. And then, like, the whole episode...
like, are they going to fuck? Is this a whole episode about, like, Picard and Marie?
Well, at one point, he's like, well, I do love his choice in wives.
Yeah.
It's like, hey.
Because you can cook and you can drink. Cook
and you get married. The best cook in town. He kept hitting on her. But then,
pretty face.
But then they all called that Lewis guy Lewis. And then right after she goes, like, you are part of the family, Jean-Luc Picard. Yeah, yeah. She goes, Louis. Yes. She's the only one that called him Louis. Everyone else called him Lewis.
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
Lewis was, like, the Eddie Haskell, I think, of the group.
Yeah.
I think, like, he was, because I think they called him Eddie Haskell because he was a rascal, right?
Presumably, yeah.
Because, like, Lewis, like, okay, I'm getting a little off topic here, but Lewis was, like, you can tell by their interactions, like, Lewis sort of finagled to give, he was, like, sort of, he, you know, whispered in Picard's ear, like, I forget the term, but, you know, he, like, he, to get him interested in that Atlantis project, you know? Yes. And then
tempted him,
you know, and then just sort of drop that hint, and then later on he like set up a fucking meeting for him,
but he knew
that Picard would get mad by that, but also he knew it would be okay in the end, because that interaction tells you so much when he tells Picard, like, he's like, and Picard is all he's like saying, like, oh, they jumped at the prospect, you know, then Picard's like,
I never said there was a prospect,
and you can tell from that one interaction that he's been doing shit like that to Picard, like, their whole friendship.
Yes, but...
And that's why he knew he could get away with it.
But I think a very important nuance there to back up a little bit from when they're first having their conversation. And this is something that this episode does repeatedly. And I've got in my notes, and I'm going to try to point out the ones I saw that I think are examples of just extremely awesome, subtle characterization work that's only possible because this character of Picard and others have been built up so much. But when Picard is walking with Lewis and they're having a little chat, mm-hmm. and you know, Picard, you know, Lewis is like, hey, you want to look at our stuff, blah blah blah, you'd ever, you know, they're looking for a new leader. When he asked that, I think he knew, he expected 100% the answer, nah, nah, nah. And when Picard looked at him and there was like a pause and he's like, no, of course I'd never leave Starfleet.
Yeah.
The look on Lewis's face is like, whoa, that was weird. Mm-hmm. Oh, something's happened. He was like, I was just kind of joking around, but now, oh shit, this might be serious. And of course, I think, which I think is partly what you're implying, like Lewis is, he's not doing it for selfish reasons,
no,
but
he's not.
Like, but he is kind
of
like,
he's a little bit of a rascal,
but he's like, hey, it'd be pretty good. It wouldn't be good, bad for me if I brought in fucking Captain Picard.
I don't think he's doing it selfishly. I don't think he's doing it maliciously at all. I think he's just like, he's giving Picard a push. He's very obviously pushing Picard and he knows that Picard might get grumpy about it, but he knows that it'll be all good in the end.
He's sort of like a,
you know, don't ask permission, ask for forgiveness later or whatever. But like Picard, like you can tell, like it's Picard's really thinking about it, because when he says, no, I'd never leave Starfleet, you can tell it's like there's a little bit of doubt there. And then when he's in front of his laptop, he's like, oh shit, I think I want this job.
Yeah.
And then Marie's like,
it's making him upset that he's interested.
He's pissed about it. And then Marie's like, no doubt, you've been through some shit. And he's like,
she's all like, no doubt.
And he's like, no, it's not that. And he's like, wait a minute, you might be right, you know? And then like the reason Picard got so mad at Lewis for like when he said, I never said there was a prospect, is because he doesn't want to be tempted by it.
Exactly. Yeah. Another thing to mention along similar grounds in terms of like subtlety, good writing, brilliant acting, making this work, was when Picard was leaving his quarters and he kind of looked back in the room. That look was the look of, I'm not sure I'm ever going to be back here. Right. He was kind of given that look of like, you're leaving your dorm room or something, where it's just like, oh, I'm not 100% sure if I'm ever going to see this room again. And it's brief, it's momentary, but it really does help set up the rest of the episode, where you're as an audience member, you're like, whoa, like Picard seems to be like, he's like properly messed up. And everyone seems to understand that. Beverly and Troy for sure are like, and Marie instantly is like, dude. And of course Robert, from the moment he sees Picard, you know, he's an asshole, but he's also like, he's like, I know my younger brother, and he's acting weird.
Yeah, I think it was the whole deal was that Picard is sort of like, I think Robert's getting frustrated because he knows Picard's gone through some shit, and Picard is trying to like act like he's got his shit together all the time. Like Picard always has to have his shit together. He's always got to be number one. Yep. He's always got to be the best. He's always got to do everything great. And that's good to have ambition, but it gets to the point where when some shit that would fuck anybody up and he's denying it, it was pissing Robert off. It's like, come on, man, you're a fucking human. Like feel some goddamn human emotions. Yeah. So he kept pushing and pecking at him the whole episode to try to get him to fucking get pissed off, because he's like, you're supposed to be upset and traumatized by this shit.
Well, precisely.
And then like, and notice when Picard, like when he when they fought and then they were laughing and then he started crying, but then he goes like
I should have been able to stop them. I should.
And that's the funniest part of the episode.
Yeah, I know. And this is even funnier.
I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't good enough.
But I mean, are we just...
This goofy French. They're all like laughing and then they're crying and then I'm fucking crying and fuck you.
Yeah, but I like, are we supposed to, is this, I mean, this is obviously about Picard dealing with trauma, very obviously, but is this also Picard just dealing with like losing, you know, because it's kind of like, I'm not good enough. I couldn't do it.
It's like Captain Kirk in Star Trek 2.
I couldn't win the race, you know, like
it's a variation on that perfectionism, people having success, all of a sudden being in a situation where all of their prior successes are meaningless. In fact, in Picard's situation, it was even worse. All of Picard's prior successes made him the perfect enemy of his own people. He knew all the technical stuff. He knew all the strategic stuff. He knew the ships and stuff. That's why the Borg were able to just decimate everybody at Wolf 359.
Into 10 parts?
What?
You said, you always complain when people use the word decimate.
No, it's one-tenth. It's to reduce by one-tenth.
Yeah, I said 10 parts. Yeah.
I know, but I think I mentioned that I'm trying to be like cooler and understand that, especially when the official bodies have decided that decimates has changed meaning to utterly obliterate, I can quietly be angry about it, but I'll move on and fight battles elsewhere, like battles about fewer versus less, which I think is very important. And things like, you know, aphorisms and sayings that people say incorrectly, right? You know?
And I don't find your modesty very convincing, brother.
This episode, there was some amazing acting from Patrick Stewart in this episode. Like, of course, like when he sort of said, like, when he's like, no, I'll never leave Starfleet. There was something you could really tell what he was feeling, that when like the part, I don't know why I like this part so much, but when he's talking to Lewis and he goes,
it's only, there's just one thing I don't understand. You were such a rotten swimmer, Lewis.
and when he's laughing, like he looks, it looks natural. Yes. It looks like he's like really, it almost looks like a blooper reel that he's actually laughing. But like, that's what, like how good his acting is that like, it looked like a real person making a real joke with real laughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then also,
well, we can officially declare Patrick Stewart, pretty good actor. Dan, can you hold that thought real quick? Because we need to take a break.
I was trying to say something.
I know, but then why don't you take a break, and then when you come back, you can say some things. We do have some emails and voicemails. No.
We're way ahead of schedule.
Not as many as last week, so no worries. It's going to be a fairly swift thing, but we'll do those at the top of the next break, and we'll
continue. Are you afraid of what it might say?
We'll continue discussing this super excellent episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation. Oh, Dan's waiting for me to say the trigger word, which is, we'll be right back.
Have Guinan call me if you need anything.
I'll see you shortly.
Dismissed.
And we're back.
Did you come back because you wanted me to look after you again?
I think we were just, you know, we still have a lot to discuss. That's why we came back, Robert.
Oh, okay.
Right.
It's good to know.
Okay. Were you going to play a sound clip, or did I say the wrong thing?
Unlikely.
Okay. So, Dan,
I was just saying other parts that I thought was just like just really subtle things that like that Patrick Stewart was doing that I really liked. I really liked when Beverly's like, you know, giving him shit about like, because she's like, she starts to do it. She's doing it on purpose at one point, because he's all talking about like going to visit home. She's like, interesting.
Yeah,
and,
I know, right?
and she keeps being like, do you feel like a blah,
well,
blah, blah?
Troy and Beverly. And I think that's the difference with Robert, right? You actually were making me think of this by pointing that out, that Robert, even though he comes off as like that kind of like the roughest, he's the one who knows what Picard needs to. Picard needs to arrive at that conclusion. Picard is aggravated when people are like, "You're fucked up, right?
Yeah,
come on, you know you're fucked up. You gotta get better. You're all fucked up."
And he's the only one that can like get away with that shit. Yeah. Not only that, it's not that he even gets away with it. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. Yeah. Like, he's the only one that doesn't give a fuck about talking to Jean-Luc Picard.
And
that
that's
way.
Why Jean-Luc, consciously or otherwise, knew somehow that he needed to go home to resolve all of that.
I was thinking of like when so Troy did all that like head shrinking on Picard, and it made me think it must be kind of annoying to be her friend, because she was kind of doing that a little bit with Beverly too, because when Beverly was like picking up the hollow thing, and then Troy was like, "Are you scared of what it might say?" Which seems like an innocent enough question, but but when Troy asked it, I would immediately be like, what are you trying to get in my head or something? Yeah. You know?
And actually, when you think about it, it's like the way she says it sounds like a reasonable thing, but it's like, are you scared what you might, what? Is like, did she think that like Jack Crusher was like, okay, Wesley, here's the deal. I'm going to teach you how to eat a chick out, right? How do you think I got your mom, right? All right, it's important to know, right?
Salut.
I don't care if you like it, but you probably will, because you're my son.
I like
Jack Crusher, Wesley Crusher. The Pussy Boys.
The Pussy Boys.
Yeah. Is that a little too blue?
Maybe.
If Jesse were here, I probably wouldn't have gone that blue.
See, the thing is,
I would have been weird about talking about like pussies in front of Jesse.
The reason I need all this advance notice when Jesse's not going to be here is because I get nervous when Jesse's not here, because somehow his presence, and it's inexplicable, it's inscrutable, but somehow. No, you haven't heard what I'm going to say yet.
No, but it literally doesn't matter, because I know I'm right there with you.
It's like somehow he balances this shit out, and I don't know how he does it.
It's the wizard.
It's some wizard shit that is beyond my understanding. Yeah. But like somehow, like him being here balances the shit out. Anyway.
Yeah, you're a wizard, Jesse.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a Harry Potter reference. Yeah, we don't normally reference Harry Potter because, you know, Harry Potter kind of, you know, sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you should have listened to me at the beginning.
J.K. Rowling definitely sucks.
So then I was saying, I was like, I like when he said this.
Look, I'm better.
Yeah, I know. It's like such bullshit.
Yeah. It was such a, I loved, of course, when he said, I'm almost done, so don't worry. We can get that. I've already played this, but I want to play it again.
Okay.
I hate it when you do that.
And because it was perfect, when Troy was like, kept being like, interesting, do you feel like blah, blah, blah? And I was like, started to roll my eyes. I was like, ugh, Troy. And then he said that. I was like, hell yeah. That's exactly the line.
Hell yeah, Picard.
And then,
you show her. You hide your drama.
And the other part where, when he sees his house for the first time and like Marie asks if anything's different or whatever, and he's all, and he says
he's surprised at how much it hasn't changed.
Yeah,
some variation on that.
Yeah, and he line. Well, I'm
yeah, yeah. I mean I know you were looking it up, but it's you know, it's one of those lines where you don't necessarily have to get it exactly right unless you're making a point about the specific
I'm just saying like she goes, do things look that different? And he goes, no, in fact, it's amazing how little it has changed. Mm-hmm. Everything is exactly as I remember it. But the way he's sort of like pensively staring with his sort of hand on his chin, just kind of like, you can see the gears sort of working behind, you can feel the gears working behind his head. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, he's a really fantastic actor. When it comes, well, I'm just saying.
No, you're right. Absolutely.
No, I'm just saying, what I'm saying is like,
this is a showcase for that.
It's a showcase for what he can really do as an actor.
Yeah. And while he was brilliant, all throughout TNG and got to do a lot of cool stuff, this episode is in particular one where he gets put in positions that Picard normally isn't, and so as a result gets to play with the Picard character in some unusual territory.
And for someone who doesn't like, who feels weird around kids, he seemed to get along with Renee pretty well.
Oh yeah, yeah. He does that thing where he's cool with anybody who can act like sort of an adultish, right?
He was being like super dry with him. Yeah. Like he's like
playful.
Yeah. Although he's like I know who you are, then you have the advantage.
I know who you are.
You have the advantage.
You're my number one uncle. Okay, right.
He's my number one dad.
Let's do a few. We got a few emails and a voicemail.
Then you have the advantage.
Clippity clip. So, we have an
You're so jealous.
We have an email from Amy. And Amy says,
wait a second.
Okay.
These are our messages.
Good. Thank you.
I got to get better at talking to that.
Amy says, I need to hear this clip at least once per episode, please. And then she provides a time code. I'll play the clip in a second. It's absolutely wholesome and adorable.
Holograms?
She goes on to say, I also want to volunteer to be Frasier's first patron because a Star Trek review podcast is a brilliant idea. That's in reference.
It's just a crazy idea.
To a voicemail from longtime listener Frasier, who said he was going to start a Star Trek review podcast.
I'm not joking, Lee.
I think it's a fantastic idea. So I'm going to play that clip that Amy is referencing.
Is she done with her email?
Yeah, that's the end of the email, but she references that this is she says she wants to hear this clip at least once per episode, please. Now, she gives a time code. So I've got this set up right before that time code. So I'll just play through a little bit and, you know, we'll figure out exactly.
You could have just pulled this time out.
You know, I could have, but I didn't.
Yeah,
because I didn't think about it until later, but I could have.
How come you never gave him prune juice? Prune juice.
Warriors drink.
Drink your prune juice.
So it's just to be clear to the audience, that's not the clip. That was Dan playing a clip. I mean, quite. I think everyone understands. That was from this episode that we just watched.
But I was also from
prune juice. Drink your prune juice.
It was also from the original episode.
Yes. Yeah. Good. Okay. So. So I'm going to play the clip from last week's episode or you know, a portion of last week's episode that Amy gave me the time code to. She said 1 hour, 20 minutes and 30 seconds. So I got it just a little 15 seconds before that. I'm saying I'm a supporter of On the Rad, except I'm a little...
Because it is On the Rad.
Well, I grew up with sisters, and so that makes me a little sensitive to things that are slant rhymes to other terms that might relate to...
Vaginas?
Oh,
menstruation,
no.
Specifically. Oh,
on the rag. Oh, on the rag. I never thought about that.
Well, I never made it explicit before.
We're not yucky guys.
I'm on the rag right now.
But you also, Dan, you grew up with brothers. Most of my friends,
yes, you
but,
got are, brothers.
Like Jesse is a sister.
But I know what I know women are.
No, I know you're familiar with women. I'm just saying, I think there's like a...
I thought on the rag was a derogatory thing to say.
It is, which is why on the... Yeah, I don't know. So somewhere in there, I think early on, especially that,
Didn't she give you the exact time code?
Yes, but not multiple time codes, right? It wasn't like, it was 1 hour, 20 minutes, and 30 seconds, but not like dash 1 hour, 20 minutes, and 35 seconds, or 52 seconds. You know what I'm saying?
I started
at 1 hour, 20 minutes, and 12 seconds.
Why didn't you start at the time she said?
Because I was scared to do that, because when you do that on YouTube, it's tricky, and I wasn't sure if I was actually getting it, because it felt like you want to start like a little before, but that was just my own anxiety.
But you started like 15 seconds before.
That was, again, just because YouTube is a little tricky, because as you point out, I could have, of course, done this more professionally and created an audio file, edited it, you know, down to what exactly.
Well, you could have started like 5 seconds before.
I would have liked to, but a YouTube interface is a little tricky.
You got this sort of like little bit scared, a little meek,
diddling my fingers. You're
just
like,
it's like, I hope he buys this.
It's true. I just, you know, I don't know if it's a justification, but anyway,
thanks, Agamus.
Thank you, Amy. All right. Next up, we have a voicemail from Isaac from Down Under.
The one and only?
The one and only Isaac from Tasmania. Take it away, Isaac.
Hello, Bran, Rickon, and Rob. It is Isaac from the Trek 365 podcast.
Hi.
Guys, I felt compelled to do another voicemail after the hilarious success of last week's voicemail.
Oh, you rapscallions.
What times we had. Rickon mentioned Neil the Seal, and I wanted to touch on that. Neil the Seal is a very famous identity within Tasmania. He is a seal that regularly comes ashore. Close to where I live, Kingston Beach, he's been hovering? I guess moonlighting. I don't know. You know the words.
Loitering.
It comes ashore. People gather around. And then it floods our social media. And then he goes back into the water to whence he came. And that's the story of Neil the Seal. I was thinking, his popularity is probably because of the rhyming name. Yeah. And I was wondering if you've ever met anyone called Venus. I don't know if that will land or not. Bran was right, by the way. Last week, what did I say, Rickon? Rickon read out a WhatsApp message about the pregnant pause. That actually had been read out in a previous episode, I reckon about 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, Dan was like, didn't we read this before? And I had no memory of it.
It was nice to hear it again. But, yeah, I made the joke in that about wanting a T-shirt, and I'd done that in the voicemail too. So I guess that kind of recycled humor is what you can expect on the Trek 365 channel for anyone who hasn't listened before. Anyway, keep up the good work. I haven't played... Where's that sound this week? But I reckon if you were going to pick one this week, it would probably be the sound of those salamanders on that planet where we just abandon our kids. Are we worse? It's probably worse than Worf as a dad, really, isn't it? Although if he had a chance, he'd abandon Alexander. I think I'm being a bit unfair on Paris and Janeway there. Anyway, love you lots. Catch you next time. Ciao.
Thanks, Agamus.
So I was right that you did play. Yes. Yes, I was like, right. I was insisting. You're like, no, no, no.
No, I don't think I said no.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong.
If I recall, and I may not recall correctly, but I think last week when you suggested that, I said, you know what? I don't know. It's totally plausible. And it turns out, yes, I repeated an email or a voicemail or WhatsApp or whatever.
Good for you, Uncle.
Thank you, Isaac. Real quick, so, just to address one point, because he
wanted to address a point too.
Yeah, but I was already starting.
Well, I was going to start, but then
no,
you
but now I started. Then you can tell your point, and who knows, maybe your point is similar. But it's not going to be the same.
Man, I got a poopy point.
I presume it's not going to be the same.
Let's make poopy points.
So Isaac laid down a rather fun joke about if we had ever heard anybody with the name Venus, you know, and then something that rhymes with that. He's making
you so jealous.
a penis joke, presumably, right?
It's entirely my fault, Murray.
And I can provide what I think is an anecdote worth a one or two chortles, which is my mother's name is Enes, as in I-N-E-S. I believe it is maybe an Egyptian name originally. However, she's born in Austria, not Australia, but Austria. Mm. And it was not uncommon growing up. They've since fixed the problem with computers and stuff, I guess. But growing up, it was not uncommon. More than one occasion, we got letters addressed to Penis Ireland.
But why would they?
And then Anus Ireland.
Why would they do that unless they were doing it on purpose to be silly?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because they're looking at the name.
He's joking.
And I think they're like, well, it can't be that. So what could it be?
Well, what's the closest word to this?
Penis or anus?
Like, why would they think that someone would be named that? So they must have been making fun.
I mean, I tend to agree with you, Dan. But that was also the time period where if we were sending letters or postcards to my Oma, my grandmother in Austria, we had to write in big letters Europe in parentheses on the envelope, because otherwise it was not uncommon for our letters or packages to be first sent to Australia, and then the Australians are like, God damn it, it's another...
I seem to have made a rather disturbing discovery.
Another wayward package. And then they would send it on to Austria, so...
oh, good Lord.
Know, it would take months to get there. That, I think, doesn't happen anymore, but, you know, the end of the last century was a wild time to be alive.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Isaac.
He was talking about Neil the Seal.
Yes.
That reminds me of, I was watching this show on, it's an Amazon Prime show called Deadlock. Mm. And it's like a crime detective show. Okay. It takes place, the first season anyway, takes place in Tasmania.
Mm.
And in that season, there's a seal, this town seal that keeps popping up that everybody knows. And the seal's name was Kevin. And I think that like Kevin might be kind of based around this idea of Neil the Seal. But Deadlock, it's a good show. It's a good crime show.
I will check it out. Is it
and then the second season takes place in, I think, the Northern Australian territories,
But it's an Australian show with Australian actors and Australian plot lines.
Well, it's the first season is in Tasmania, so take that for what you will.
But that's in Australia. So I just didn't know if it was like a British show. You know how I'm saying, like, there's like American shows will be like, we're gonna like put a show in Australia. Never mind, don't worry about it. Silly questions.
So yeah, I mean, yeah,
the case of the missing Brekkie. Brekkie is short for breakfast. I understand. I may be incorrect. Isaac can always correct us on that. Okay. Thanks, Isaac. One other thing to mention is Isaac alluded to our regular feature game we play called Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before?
Have we done that in a while?
No, because we decided to take it. We took a little break, and next week, our coverage of Strange New Worlds. Season 4 of Strange New Worlds. We decided to take a little break, and we're going to start Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before up on our next episode. So something something to look forward to. And by the way, just to remind folks, we welcome suggestions from listeners for sound clips, 10 seconds or less. Either send us the time codes or you can send us the clip. And something where the goal of the game is to be difficult enough to place that it's a challenge to hardcore Star Trek fans. But yeah, hopefully not like totally impossible, although that can be funny as well. You can send those to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. All right. And then...
All right.
We've
good.
Got any more points on that?
Very good.
On
fine.
Isaac's email, Dan, because we just do have one more email.
You don't get it.
But where would I stay? Okay, so we have.
Oh God.
Speaking of elder brothers, we have a couple of emails from a fellow goes by the name of Rob.
Hello.
That's Dan's older brother.
Hello,
Dan. Or I'm sorry.
What the devil happened to you up there?
I was imagining Dan and Rob like wrestling in the mud.
Robert.
And then their little brother just being like, what are these fucking assholes? Okay.
Cancel the parade in your favor.
All righty then. Oh, I'm Dick Van Dyke. hello, Dan, Danny, and Danielle.
Hi.
In last week's episode of IGST, you all expressed confusion over McCoy's line from the TOS episode, The Alternative Factor, when he says that Lazarus had the, quote, constitution of a dinosaur.
Right.
Recuperative powers, ditto.
Yes.
I believe the answer lies in the work of the famed paleontological research collective, Dino Rock, who detailed their findings on this subject in this excerpt from their 1998 publication entitled The Dinosaur Song.
And Dino Rock.
And the line is, dinosaurs were strong and scary.
Big animals who are not very hairy.
Clearly, strong seems to refer to a dinosaur's constitution, implying that a dinosaur's recuperative powers are also strong, which usually follows when one has a strong constitution. I think Dino Rock's hypothesis of strength in both dinosaur muscle and constitution is reinforced by the next lines of the song, which go, when they step on Earth, it rumbles and tumbles and is left in a jumble. With that power, it seems that Lazarus
sorry about that.
would be quite formidable, let me rephrase that because I think he's transposed.
He fell down, and then we both fell down together.
I was going to bring that up later. Would be a quite formidable opponent, and would also indicate that McCoy was right to warn his crewmates. I hope this resolves any confusion you might have on the issue. Signed, Rob. P.S. Dino Rock's full body of research, including the above excerpt, is available through several audio research databases, such as Spotify.
Thanks, Agamas!
There we go. Okay.
I think I remember not only hearing that when I was in some kind of early grade, on like in some classroom in a super young grade, I don't remember when, but I also feel like, I remember my little brother, my younger brother, Alex, had that album. I feel like I saw a performance of that at the amphitheater in Mason District Park, which is a local park that has this amphitheater.
It's a groovy amphitheater, by the way.
Do they still use it for anything?
Yes.
Do they still have, they have some performances there still? Because I remember they used to have a lot of performances.
Yeah,
I think
like
they had
magic shows and like music shows.
I remember like we would go there after dark and
to smoke marijuana.
No, we would go there after dark to play laser tag,
to kiss each other on the mouth holes.
We'd play tag, and then it evolved to laser tag. Okay, stop. Let me say it.
Okay.
I'm saying it.
You were trying to say it
because you keep throwing me off by like interrupting me.
Okay.
Let me say it.
All right.
We'd go, because I'm talking and you
talking
keep going.
Talking about a low constitution,
I'm,
am I right?
I'm talking about playing tag and you're like, and you're marijuana, and you know you make it, and you're in your man.
I'm not Cartman.
I wasn't Cartman either. Mm. Can we say I'm Cartman? I'm not Cartman. Mm. Don't say that to
no,
me.
No comment.
You're commenting, but you're so much commenting.
I'm like, how can I least aggravate Dan now?
I've always thought you needed a little humiliation.
I got a hose. We can make a mud puddle.
Either would do.
we can make a mud puddle.
The amphitheater is surprisingly fun to play tag, which eventually evolved into laser tag just in the amphitheater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did that a handful of times.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
Good.
There's all sorts of fun things. And you can make out, and you can smoke marijuana. Yeah.
Okay. So,
and I'm not doing Cartman.
Dan has a recollection that he may or may not have seen a performance of Dino Rock at amphitheater.
No, no.
Local amphitheater.
I'm saying I saw something that involved dinosaurs and singing, and I'm assuming it must have been Dinosaur Rock.
Okay. I think it's a good assumption.
I should have been. Just stop. I should.
Rob sent a follow-up email.
Ooh.
Now, just
looks good on you.
Give you a heads up, Rob. I have slightly edited your email because, well, I think you'll understand.
Is there porn in there?
Yes, he sent me a lot of porn, and it wasn't of you, and it wasn't of him. It was just, you know, just like any porn you could just get, random porn.
I hate it when you do that. I hate it when you do that. I hate it when you do that. I hate it when you do that.
He guessed pretty well, I gotta say. I guess he was perceptive.
I know what you mean, Lieutenant.
Rob, in his second email, says, follow up.
Well, you know women.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The random O'Brien just being like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I know.
Like, was he trolling him or what? It kind of seemed like he was trolling him.
He looked like he had an inward smile going on the whole time. Like, he was fucking with him.
He was just like, I stand here all the fucking day in fucking Transporter Room 3 and you motherfuckers come and complain about your nice mom!
When was the first episode he appeared in? This was like a young O'Brien that hadn't yet become...
Oh, O'Brien's season one, except he's in a... He's like a junior... He's like an ensign and has an officer's uniform.
I know this is a side note real quick. This is a fun-loving O'Brien that hasn't become jaded by the responsibility of, like, DS9. Because in DS9, he becomes all curmudgeonly.
Well, he's not married yet. He's not a father yet. Yeah. He hasn't had to... He's already murdered a bunch of Cardassians, but he hasn't had to face up to one and his racism and prejudice.
He hasn't had the memory of, like, several years in a horrible prison implanted in his brain yet.
Where he does awful things.
Yeah. Like, so he's like a fun-loving O'Brien in TNG, DS9.
He hasn't been slightly shifted through time and replaced by a different version of himself slightly.
Look,
he hasn't
I'm,
been...
I'm better.
Remember Whispers? Well, that's one of my favorite O'Brien West episodes because the whole episode, everyone's acting crazy and then it's like, whoa, we won't spoil it, but you know. It's a good one about O'Brien being fucked up. So, okay, let me get to the email. He says, follow-up to my previous email. I hadn't watched the first episode of SNW season 4. Nor did I know of the plot of it when I sent the first email.
Wait, I haven't seen it yet, so is this a spoiler?
I took out anything that could potentially be a spoiler.
Okay.
I wasn't spoiled, but that's what I removed. However, I have just watched it, and I was delighted to find that it strengthens my argument. And again, I've elided the remainder of the email to avoid spoilers, both for Dan and any listeners who may not have seen the first episode of Strange New Worlds yet. But for those who have, I'm guessing you will be amused by Rob's comment. And now I am looking forward to watching Strange New Worlds as soon as I can.
You weren't spoiled by it? You don't get spoiled by things like that.
The thing that was included was opaque enough, and I was already familiar with that, with one little bit of information from a preview thing
I saw. I appreciate your attention to spoilage.
Yes, but I still thought it was worth mentioning that whatever's in that episode might actually help his argument about dinosaur constitution being a good thing versus a bad thing.
I appreciate your
dedication
to varying levels of people's spoiler thresholds.
Yes,
or something.
Smiling, you sound like a Voyager engineer. the spoiler thresholds are just all out of whack.
Yes, I fell down and then rose.
All right, that does it for all the emails and all that.
He's still trying to raise the ocean floor.
All that jazz. I did want to. Jumping back into the conversation about the episode, since Dan and I have been kind of pointing out some of these fun little nuanced things that are so brilliant when you add the writing, the acting, and everything, the way everything's produced together. Another one I wanted to call out was when they were at the dinner table and Picard and Robert are having that argument about, like, technology versus...
This is a very old argument.
Yes, exactly, right? That line. Now, what's so amazing, right? And I don't know that I caught this in prior viewings.
Life is already too convenient.
So, we know that the argument is set up as Picard has a tendency to be, always want to be, like, out exploring, discovering, doing new things. Robert is all about keeping to the old ways, etc. And what I think is amazing about this scene is when Marie says that line, you want to play that line? This is a very old argument.
This is a very old argument.
Now, it's obvious that she means, what she's meaning to say is, this is silly. It's an old argument. This is a pointless thing to go around in circles and stuff. But he responds, yes, it is. But the way he responds is like, yeah. Because it's an old argument is why it has value.
Oh, because his old things are good?
Because old things are good! And I never caught that before. And I was like, the way he acted it, the way it was written, I realized, I was like, no, that's intentional. That's further characterizing Robert as he anything that's old, by default, he's like, that's good. And I really, really appreciated that. And so much of that was in the way the actor kind of looked, because her look was, this is silly. His look was like, oh yeah, thank you. Exactly. That's why we're doing it. Exactly. It's almost like she provided evidence for him that they should continue the argument rather than just stop it.
Evidence! The danger of losing those values which we hold most precious.
Yeah. What's the deal? So Robert is like a big big bottom lip frowny face man. Yeah. Like he's always frowny face, yeah. And he's always sticking his bottom lip out like I'm so. And when he's like saying like you're damn right, I was jealous. It's like you can feel like his anus coming out his mouth.
It's
like
it's so good that they got great a really wonderful actor, because again to play opposite Patrick Stewart is I'm sure is always going to be a challenge, but Robert, right, he's got to tower over, he's got to be the older brother.
I mean,
how do you accomplish that? I think he does.
I think Marie is too good for this guy though.
Oh sure.
And like and, sure. And then the whole argument of like we've been like having this discussion about having replicators in the house for a while, and then Jean-Luc was like, yeah, I remember mother and father having the same argument. And it's like all you can think is like, oh, so like he doesn't want replicators because he wants like the good shit, but she wants a replicator because she's the one who has to make it. So now on the other hand,
because they were all like, she's a good cook, the only good cook now, in France.
Now on the other hand, I will say he does take the time out of his day to do all the vineyard shit. Yeah. So it's not like he's sitting around the house doing nothing.
Exactly.
But at the same time, like the person doing it should get to decide the method that they use to do it.
I'm curious about, because one thing that's not made 100% clear and is left open to interpretation is that scene at the end that where Robert and Marie, you know, she's like, oh, he's been out there forever looking at the stars. Robert's all like, let him.
Yeah.
You know. It's, I don't know if the lesson is that Robert was never quite as like that the curmudgeonness is to some degree like an act and an affectation, or if he kind of learns something also in the process
I was wondering that too, actually, if it was like Picard rubbed off on him a little bit, maybe, or something
during the mud fight.
Because
we got to take a break.
Oh shit. Can
we're going to come right back into whatever the fuck you're talking about, Dan, okay? All right. We will be right back.
All I need now is a little time to myself.
Why do you walk away?
Because you know Picard jerked off, right?
Lots and lots.
Yeah. What's his O face like? Oh, you know, I imagine it's not so much a Star Trek thing. It's like when he did like Ebenezer Scrooge on stage. He's like, oh, I'm shooting ropes. I'm shooting Celtic knots. Out my penis.
That's weird.
Yeah,
there's also weird things. Release.
Yeah, I am. And we're back.
Enter. Captain, welcome back.
Hello, Wesley.
See, you just did that because it was creepy.
Yeah, I know, I did. Jack's dead.
All right.
I'd be delighted.
All right, okay, so...
It's only... There's just one thing I don't understand.
I'm sure you misunderstood.
Well, I'm afraid that I do not understand this potential.
I don't understand, Mom.
He's all like, super, like, is he pissing or filling a wine glass? What's going on there? All right. Just to put a little button on the Robert and Marie looking out the window at Renee. So it's all sweet. They're pulling back from the window and it looks all magical. And then it goes to this. Look, I enjoyed this. I liked it. It was just a somewhat bizarre scene where, for some reason, Renee was sitting under a tree being a hobbit.
Yeah, I know.
And there was a shooting star.
I know.
And a brilliant thing this episode does is the backgrounds, where it's like, this is like a medieval French village with future robot tech and crazy shit in the background.
Yeah. That reminded me of the scene earlier when Picard first meets up with Robert, which is funny because Picard...
Walking down that path.
Because Picard goes like, oh, it's good to see you. And Robert doesn't say anything. He pauses and he doesn't say it back. He just says, you tired? He doesn't say, good to see you. But then it zooms out. Mm-hmm. And it's like they're really at some kind of vineyard or something.
Yes,
because but you can see the point where the backdrop hits, and I'm trying to figure out how they. I mean, I'm sure it's not like some super movie secret. I'm sure it's a very simple effect they're doing, but I don't know how they do it. Mm-hmm. Like how they impose the backdrop onto what seems like a
like a large plot of like
actual outside vineyard. It's not like on a set.
Yeah, because you can see when it turns into like a painted thing, and you can obviously tell in the background you got these weird future towers. Mm-hmm. But then there's also like a castle back there.
Exactly.
Too.
and not just like a castle; it's a somewhat like foreboding castle. Yeah, right. Like, why is Picard is there a vampire up there?
It's really weird. But yeah, I'm not sure how they do that. How they sort of put that background.
This episode actually does a lot of unusual things. In particular, it uses the depth of space a lot more than is normal on TNG. And by that, I mean, the scene you mentioned is a good example, but there's a few scenes where you see Picard and Robert or whoever far away because they're in a live location, right? So they're all far away and maybe they're like walking towards the camera or whatever, but they're using a lot of that actual 3D distance as opposed to things being more confined to the bridge or a small room or what have you, yeah.
Yeah, and I doubt they just like hung a giant tarp over like the vineyard. They must have like done some kind of after post effect to do that, I guess.
You know, Dan, I'm going to agree with you.
They did it in post. When they were talking about like raising the ocean floor.
Yes.
First of all, I was like,
the Atlantis project.
Yeah, when he was all like, is Lewis still talking about raising the ocean floor? When I heard that, I was like, what the fuck? I thought they were, so it was totally different. What I thought at first, the way I interpreted it at first is that they were going, like the water levels got too high, so they were going to raise all of the ocean floor by like a few inches or something. But really it was just one small portion by like a lot. So
which
is also a pretty big deal.
It seems like, seems like maybe that's not a good idea. That's a classic late 80s, early 90s, right? There, because on TNG, they're all like, we the ozone layer, and like we want to be, we're all about environmentalism and all that stuff. And oh yeah, you can just raise a new continent, and that's not going to be a problem for any.
Oh, good lord!
For anybody, no fish, no sea level issue. Anyway.
There is something I'd like to see.
So
funny idea.
So of course, like Robert responds in the usual like grumpy way. He's like, I don't see why we need this. We don't need that. We don't need this. It's like, well, we don't need anything. But that's how progress just kind of happens. Yeah. Like it's like you don't need the people 1,000 years prior to you don't need the shit you use now.
You're selecting. It's like, look, you can do this. But just know, you're selecting an arbitrary point in time.
Exactly, right?
And people have talked about this with the Amish and some other groups. No problem with doing that as long as it's like you're using technology. You've just decided that there's a particular level of complexity that you decided think is better. That's fine. That philosophy is fine. But
it's like but don't go around pushing on other people because that's your opinion.
And also, like, just as long as you understand that. You're just making a somewhat arbitrary choice about where in the technological timeline you've just opted to like stick to, right?
That's not true.
So Picard was kind of a dick because when Robert is all talking about like
At dinner?
Yeah, this was at dinner
when they're sitting around the fucking amazing table.
Yeah,
right. That farm table and like. I don't know if that was a real place or a set, presumably a set, but if it was, they did an amazing job.
So he's like, he's still trying to raise the ocean floor. And Marie's like, oh yes, he's very excited about it. And then Robert's like, I see no good reason why the Earth should have another subcontinent. And then Picard's answer, he goes, it's really quite exciting, actually. Yeah. That's first of all, condescension number one. And then here he goes, if you understand the potential of exploring a new world on our planet, he could have worded that better because the way he worded it, he says, if you understand the potential, which is implying that, like, his brother doesn't get it. Yes. He's like, oh, it's obvious you don't understand. And it's that kind of language that Picard could have chosen different words to make the same point, but not seem like kind of an asshole about it.
Yeah. People write in every week and tell us the same advice, but I just choose to ignore it. I don't pass it along.
I pass gas instead. But with Robert at one point, Robert, he accused, like, when Rene goes up and is like, I have my number one paper. And then he like goes off and goes and fetches his paper. And then he accuses him of encouraging him. Mm-hmm. And he goes, it's hard enough to protect him from all that's out there without you encouraging him. And Picard's just like, I'm not encouraging him. Picard, he could have won that part because Picard did nothing to encourage him.
Yeah.
Nothing. The whole time the kid was talking to him about his paper. Yes. Picard was only responding. And in fact, he was giving minimal responses. Mm. Like when he was saying like, oh, did you get a ribbon? He was like, I don't recall. He was like trying to.
And this was
like a you can't win scenario. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because when Picard answered like, I don't remember if I won a ribbon. Mm. And that's when Robert was like, ah, oh, so modest. I know
you're like, fuck you. You know you won a ribbon.
Of course, if Picard had said he won a ribbon, he would have given him shit for that too. And so there was nothing Picard was doing that was encouraging Rene at all. But then Picard fucked it up because he turned around and he said, if you weren't so narrow-minded, if you allowed him to see the world as it really is, then it turned into, instead of Picard like getting shit on for something he didn't do, now it's turned into Picard is telling someone else how to raise their kid. Mm-hmm. And especially, and that's fucked up. So like, he could have had the upper hand on that one, but he fucked it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I see you're like really in tune with these brotherly dynamics. This is a really helpful perspective.
No.
To provide. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Oh, no. No, 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 no.
There are so many no's in this episode.
No, sir. No. No. Certainly not.
No.
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 No. No.
No, no, no.
No,
no,
no.
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 No, 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 no.
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 No. That will not be necessary.
Did you happen to string together all the times people said family? I don't even know if it was a lot of times, but I noticed when Jack Crusher said family, it stood out to me. It's like, oh, he said the title of the episode. But then I recalled, I was like, oh, I think it's been mentioned kind of a bunch of times.
Oh, really?
Like,
I only have
it. I think it was like, Worf, you're part of our family. Family, you're Picard, you're part of our family. You know, there was a bunch of times when people kept saying the word family.
I only got it during one of them.
Yeah. Well, now.
I must be an asshole.
There's probably some extra Picard stuff to talk about, but I do want to make sure we talk a little bit.
About Worf?
Specifically about Worf and also a little bit about Wesley. But Worf in particular.
Worf was like kind of Worf thinks he's all like this big tough Klingon, but he's kind of like a whiny little kid in this episode.
And this is not necessarily new for Worf, but this is a good extension.
He's all angsty.
He's angsty, and you know, the episode is helpful. It provides a lot of information about Worf's background and upbringing.
That I wish you would be a little more reserved.
That helps you understand his character and his journey a little bit more, but also, and by that I mean part of it being those he's got like some of the most awesome parents ever.
Yeah,
and he knows it, but at the same time, like a lot of kids, he's also wants that separation because you can. It's that funny thing where his mom says your hair is a little long. He's aggravated about it, but then later in the episode, you see him. He's in the mirror and he's all like looking at his hair because he listens to his mom. He wants to know. He wants to know her opinion.
By the way, where the fuck did they get that chair?
Which chair?
The one he was sitting in near
the crazy chair.
The crazy. Did they make that? Couldn't have bought that anywhere.
I think they probably bought. They live in L.A. and people do strange things in L.A.
That does not look like a Warrior's chair.
No, well, that's the thing. Prune juice. Strange chair. Worrying about his hair length. Worf is not a true Klingon.
That was a straight
He's the imagination that he had of what a Klingon is.
That's a bubble chair. It says it was a chair of bubbles.
Yeah, exactly.
So...
I think it's on purpose. It's like Worf. You're right. Worf envisions himself as this tough guy, which he is, but he's also a softy.
But he never grew. And the thing is, you're talking about how he's like, you know, kid embarrassed by his parents and stuff. He never grew out of that phase.
Yeah.
But it was funny when Sergei was like, "Did you put on some weight?" Yeah. And Worf's like, "No." He's like all indignant. He's like, "No."
And I really enjoyed the whole gag with the father being a total nerd about starships and
yes.
And he kept saying like, "I have all the schematics and you know drawings and stuff." That was fun.
Sure, you have. Looks good on you.
This also sets up some stuff that happens later with Worf. Of course, the introduction. You know, there's Alexander and there's his other brother with the holographic. You know, who's he? What's it? And all that. And then
please tell me he's an only child.
This is a nice, it's a good chunky little side plot for Worf, and I enjoyed it. Especially the part at the beginning where he kind of felt like he was getting punished for finishing his work early because, you know, it was like kind of almost like Scotty like where he's like, okay, the phaser's all set and then I'm going to go do this other stuff. Remember there was that episode where Picard like had to order Worf to do chilling.
Yeah.
And this is almost similar where Riker's like, no, you go hang out with your parents. You did a great job. You finished everything ahead of schedule. That's awesome.
Well, Riker was being kind of a dick, I thought, because Worf was talking about how it's dishonorable for parents to you know, see them at work. Yeah. Now, if that's a real Klingon thing, then like, that's like Riker being, you know, intolerant, because Riker was really giving him the side eye that whole time. Like even when, like, and Riker even says, he's like, well, you know, if you don't want to see your parents, I can think of some more work for you. Mm-hmm. And Worf is like, no, that won't be necessary. Yeah. And he's just like, okay. And he just kind of looks at him like he's like Riker's a little kind of like, fuck that guy. What the fuck? Yeah.
Well, I didn't interpret it that way.
If you watch it, Riker is totally giving him the fucking stink eye that whole fucking opening scene.
I'll go back and check it out, because I definitely kind of also caught on to that idea where Riker, I was thinking that same thing where I was like, you know, if that is the Klingon culture. On the other hand, a couple things. First of all, with Worf and Klingon culture, one thing we have learned over the years is that Worf's interpretation of Klingon culture, since he was not raised with it, may often be, and in fact often has been proven to be, an inaccurate version. It's like the storybook version. When he meets Klingons that are all like just drunken and fucking around and, you know, being ridiculous or whatever, he's always like all annoyed by them. And then he, like, he's one of those people that is, it has that kind of displacement of identity, because he imagines he wants to be this one thing, but he's been raised by a people in a community that work differently. They've got, you know, different cultural stuff.
Well, it was definitely him, like, when they were saying he only wanted to eat Klingon food as a kid, that was definitely like an overcompensation for, like, him feeling displaced and having, like, not having an identity.
And being, like, extra awesome at warrior stuff and all the stuff that later on you find out, like, most Klingons just kind of don't bother with that. They're just like, I'll just use my disruptor.
So in this episode, he's all talking to O'Brien, you know, he's like, I'm not looking forward to this. I love this line. He goes,
I wish they would come so it would begin and end sooner.
Just like, I don't know if that's how it works.
Yeah, if you take it out of context and think of it in a naughty way, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I wish they would come so it would begin and end sooner. I wish they would come so it would begin and end sooner. I wish they would come so it would begin and end sooner.
I expect many people have had that thought at some point during their lives.
But then O'Brien's like trying to relate to him. He goes like, I know what you mean, Lieutenant. And he's like, unlikely. Like, he's being really like emo and angsty. Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm the only one who's got problems. And like I said, DS9 O'Brien wouldn't have taken that shit from anyone. Yeah. But and then Worf is all like, I mentioned his dad like talks about his weight and he's all like, no. Like, all embarrassed. He's all embarrassed. Like, and then his mom even says, he's like, Sergey, you agreed that we wouldn't embarrass him. So, like, this is like a big deal to Worf. He's always getting embarrassed.
Yeah. And then, but then she goes on to embarrass him, like, immediately after that.
And then, there was a scene in 10 Forward when he's like, Mom, you need to be more reserved. You're embarrassing me in front of my Starfleet friends, you know? And then he, like, leaves him. Then he kind of leaves him high and dry with Guinan. I know he had to do some work, but he was just like, oh, just do something.
Whatever. But then Guinan was like, awesome. Guinan was all like super awesome.
But yeah, she, of course, that's what I'm saying. Lucky Guinan was there to be like awesome and put it all and turn it around.
She was probably all annoyed too. She was just like, ugh. It's just, she did a good job. She was all smiling. And as soon as the camera panned off, she was like, oh, God, just every fucking day I'm dealing with this with one person or another.
Yeah, it's just like all this behavior is like the behavior of a child. Mm. But I feel like they must have left us, they cut a scene out. Mm. I feel like, because there was this, they were talking about, of course, it was all sort of focused, vaguely focused around this discommendation thing.
And so are you mentioning like when they did that whole like talking to Geordi and they're like, we have to talk to you about
his son. So there was,
and then you're like, okay, what did
they? Yeah, and so, okay, he talks to Geordi, he goes, Geordi, we got, I want to talk to you about my son. And then it cuts off and they're like, what did he say? And then Worf, then let's jump ahead to when they were 10 forward and Worf leaves them and then they're talking to Guinan. Then the next scene we see them together, the next scene we see Worf, we see him in his room and they come in and he's like, I want to tell you all that I'm really happy you're here. Yeah. I feel like there was a scene somewhere between 10 Forward and when he saw them where he like had a good talking to by from some one of the other Starfleet members and realized how lucky he was.
Or a Guinan interaction.
Well, I feel like maybe like there was supposed to be a conversation. Now, this is totally me bullshitting, talking out my ass.
Well,
but
you're speculating.
I'm speculating.
It's the professional term.
Yeah, no, bullshitting.
The podcasting professional.
I feel like there must have been a scene where he was talking to Geordi, and Geordi was like basically being like, "Look, your dad's worried about you because of this and that and this." And in that conversation, Worf realized how lucky he was to have all that, and that's why, because there was nothing that indicated that he should have felt differently from the 10 Forward scene. Because in the 10 forward scene, it ended with him being embarrassed by them. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, all of a sudden, he's like, I love you guys. You guys are the best. What changed in between those two time periods? I think there was a meeting with Jordy where Jordy like made him realize like how lucky he was. Yeah. And on top of that, we would have found out what Sergey was saying to him, because Jordy would have been like, Sergey said blah, 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 blah. And that's what, and then we would have had the double thing is it would have given us a reason for him to sort of be like, oh, I love you guys. And we would have found out what the fuck that conversation was about.
I hadn't considered that, but I think you're right, because the other thing I was thinking was that this episode somewhat weirdly downplayed or did not really directly address or remind the viewers about the importance of honor and Klingon and stuff. Now, it could be that they were just trusting the audience to understand how important this is to Worf, but I kind of, now that you mention that, that there is that disconnect, and in addition, I could see a scene where it turns out Sergey, because, you know, Worf is always harping on about, like, nobody truly understands his deal, his parents truly, but I could see a scene where we find out that Sergey is talking to Geordi and is like, dude, like, we know, like, we might not understand it, but we do know that Worf cares about honor, and what we understand from reading Federationopedia, that discommendation means that as far as the Klingons are concerned, he has no honor, and it's like being excommunicated from the Catholic Church or something similar. And then, and his dad voicing that, then maybe Geordi telling Worf, like, dude, you say they don't understand you, but... They do, and they care.
Yeah.
And then maybe that would be the scene that would get Worf to be like, you know what? I am really happy you're here.
Yeah, because I feel like they didn't really talk about the discommunication enough. Like, it was kind of like, it was there, but it was easily forgotten in the mix. This line I think you were talking about.
I do not believe any human can truly understand my dishonor.
When I first heard that, I thought he was referencing the fact that he was forced to hang out with his parents during work.
like it was a gag?
Like, because he was saying, like, it's dishonorable for parents to visit while you're on duty. And then, like, and then I thought he was saying, like, because Riker, I thought, was giving him the side eye. And so I thought, like, at first I thought Worf was like, no human will understand how dishonorable it is for parents to visit their child at work. But really, he's probably talking about the discommendation.
I think so, Dan. I think you eventually came to the correct conclusion.
Eventually. Now, it took me a while.
Now, since you reminded me, you kept saying duty. Let's do our duty or no duties. It's just going to be me tonight. Jesse can write an email in, or I guess he'll be on the podcast next week.
Bilan is on it.
He can just tell us what his view would have been. So... I think you said we have two?
Two.
All right.
It is inappropriate for a Klingon to receive family while on duty.
That one away.
While on duty, on duty, while 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 on duty, on duty, on duty, on duty, 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 duty. It is inappropriate for a Klingon to receive family while on duty, 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 duty.
You needn't emphasize, Dan. I think you know where I'm going to go. This is a 100%. It's a duty.
It's a big brown duty.
It's not a not a duty. It's a duty. 100%.
And then a duty. And then a duty fell on the floor.
Is that a song?
And then a duty fell on the floor. Then a duty fell on the floor.
Is this an original creation? All right. Next one. Duty or no duty. And if the audience hasn't figured out, we determine when somebody says duty, whether they said duty like poop or duty, as in the word duty.
So no duty means duty.
Yes.
And duty means poop.
Yes.
No duty means not poop.
Great.
If you don't want to see your parents, that's your business. But we don't get back to Earth that often. I'm sure we could arrange for you to have more off-duty time while they're here.
No.
Duty time while they're here. Duty time while they're here. Duty time while they're here. Duty time while they're here.
I do like the part when Worf is all like, no!
Let me play the last half.
Yeah.
I'm sure we could arrange for you to have more off-duty time while they're here.
No.
That is opposite way. That's 100% no duty for me. That's not a duty, no duty. It's a clear duty, Riker is...
I'm sure we could arrange for you to have more off-duty time while they're here.
You know, I hear the...
It's...
the...
duty time while they're here.
I don't think it's 100%. I don't think it's a no-brainer. I think some brains are involved. I'm going to say no duty, reluctantly. But I agree it's a no duty, but I think it's easily missed. It's easily missed. It's easily mistaken for a duty.
Yeah. Unlike you. You would not be easily missed.
Ah, you motherfucker.
No, no, wait. We would miss you. I'm not saying you're like a big guy. I'm not saying like, I'm not saying if people are like trying to shoot
him. Shame on you both.
That it would be like easy to hit him because he's like.
Damn you.
He's like some sort of goblin giant. No, no, no.
You were a bully.
Yeah. Okay. We do briefly at least want to address the Wesley business. I know we touched on it a little bit. I thought it was interesting. It was an interesting kind of small little storyline. And you get to see Wesley in his ensign uniform.
So the speech at the end, there was all sorts of like, it was all sorts of like, aw in it because mm-hmm. Okay. So Jack goes, "Hi Wesley, as I make this recording, you're about 10 weeks old. I wanted you to know who I am today. You see, this Jack Crusher won't exist by the time you're grown up."
Goddamn right about that, Jack Crusher.
I'll be older, more experienced, and hopefully a little wiser. But this person will be gone.
Multiple characters this episode are like not going to get what they thought.
And I want you to know who your father was when you came into the world. So yeah. Ugh. Then he goes on later to say, "So let me just apologize for all the mistakes I'm about to make as you grew up." He didn't get to make any mistakes because he's died.
He just made one big mistake.
And then he goes, "I hope you don't grow up resenting the fact that I was gone so much." He was gone because he was dead.
Yes, it's very upsetting.
And then he talks about responsibilities that come with the uniform. Then he's like, "Maybe you'll want to wear a Starfleet uniform one day."
And
he's like, I got it right here.
That was cute.
And then he goes, then he ends it by apologizing about his rambling message. And he says, "Maybe I'll do better next time," mm-hmm. except he can't because he's mm-hmm. dead. Yeah. So
Picard killed him because Picard was an evil man who wanted to free up Beverly. Mm. Yeah.
You so jealous?
I love you, Wesley.
It was a sweet scene.
He kind of had a Wesley vibe to him somehow.
I thought the casting was really good.
Yeah.
And almost like he felt a little bit like almost like a Keir Delia type from, you know, in 2001. He's one of the main astronauts. But anyway, there was just like, it was definitely you could buy him as Wesley's father, right? Which is always nice when the casting does that. And he did a good job with a kind of a silly, sappy speech, mm-hmm. but good addition. Mm-hmm. A little bit of closure there in one sense.
Did the whole like grabs at him and he disappears and he's like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, shit. Because it's a hologram.
A what?
A hologram.
Holograms? I don't get it.
Any other major points? I have a couple of little things. You already played the old we both fell down gag where they're all like jibber jabbering over each other. Oh. And just keep
he fell down, and then we both fell down together.
Yeah. Now that was just the clip, right?
Yeah.
If I recall, I think isn't there an issue with the software that you're having trouble like playing it all over itself, or can you do that?
No. There's an issue. I can't play it like a like super double time. Yeah. I mean, I can play like I can do like.
He fell down, and then we both together.
I can play several sounds over top each other, but I can't do the echoey thing that effect. Why'd you want me to do that?
No, just because it was funny because this was already doing that effect live.
The
way they were reading it was funny. And then if you played it like itself repeatedly.
I can play it over itself. I just can't do it as close together as I used to be able to.
And this one, he's going down.
We both together.
I fell down and then
And then Maria's all like, she puts her hands on her hips and she's like, "Oh, you Picards are all the same."
Yeah. She's like, "Heavens to Betsy, what happened here?
You trod all this mud in here." Yeah. Picard's like, "Oh, it's all my fault."
He's like,
"Have you been fighting?
"Have you two been fighting?" And then he goes,
"No, certainly not. No."
Like that. "Certainly not. The Picards wouldn't fight. Certainly not."
Another thing I noticed was that we don't see the person's face, but when it goes into 10 forward with that Sergei scene and with Worf and all that, at the bar, somebody is picking up a tray of drinks and they're wearing that, I guess, junior bartender outfit that we see in the episode Lower Decks. Like
not Looks the, good on you.
Not the series Lower Decks, but the TNG episode Lower Decks, where one of the Lower Deck characters is that bartender. I think it must be the same costume. It's certainly the same pattern where it's like green checkerboard, green and black checkerboard. Just a fun little thing that I noticed because I've always enjoyed that particular outfit.
At the dinner scene, when they were saying salute, they all said salute and drank. I think that they purposefully hid Renee's glass because I think he was drinking wine too.
I looked for that and I saw a very brief moment when the camera is behind Renee's back and they're doing a toast and you can see that there's water in the glass.
Oh, is there?
But I don't know. I think maybe they were not. That's like a big screen HD remaster. I don't think you would have seen that on the TV. I think they wanted to leave it up to the imagination because in real life in France, the kid would probably at least have a little glass of wine.
I mean, it's a fucking vineyard anyway.
But it's also America during the, Reagan or Bush administrations, and they're all like, say no to drugs and don't drink alcohol until you're rich. And do cocaine, sure. You know, how can you not do cocaine?
Yeah, that was
like the whole 80s thing.
Yeah.
Then in the 90s, we're like, don't do cocaine, do heroin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And LSD.
Yeah. Well, you know.
When Picard's leaving, he goes, someday I'll be leaving for my starship too. Yeah, and then Picard's all like, well, there's plenty of time for that. You may decide to do something else as you get older. And the way he shakes his head, he's like, ew, no. Yeah. If you look at your shaking hands, he's like, ugh, I don't think so. Gross. Yeah. But they do some weird kissing action at the end. I'm not saying it's weird to kiss at the end. I know that's the kiss between how Marie and Picard did the goodbye kiss, that looked really normal. Yeah. But maybe it's just like, this is how they do it with brothers in France, but they were like, not.
this is how they do it, comma, with brothers in France.
They were more close. Their lips were closer together. And it was more like, huh? Violent, more. There was more. It was more emotional.
Picard and Robert. Not Rene.
No. Not right. Robert, no, Rene. Good. Robert. It was like passionate. Mm. It was like they did a hard like. It was like a hard like. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was like with
brothers
Marie,
in the mud.
Like Maria was just like. But with
Robert.
Robert and Jean-Luc, it was like. Yeah. Yeah. And they were like really close. It was like. Get in there.
Fun fact: Jean-Luc's middle name is Travis.
Is that fun?
Jean-Luc Travis Picard.
Jean-Luc Travis Picard.
Final points. Final points? Because we got to shut things down here.
I think that...
Bibbidi-bop.
It was funny that...
Hilarious that...
people die every day. When they fight, you know, and Picard all like is all like sad and stuff, and he's getting it all out, and then like Robert's like helping him and stuff. Yeah. He couldn't help it though. Before he helped him out, he had to give him one last little jab when he goes, "So my brother is a human being after all." And then he starts helping him out, but he just had to be a little bit of a...
That was a very important line because that was kind of the core thing that Renee... was phrasing it as an insult, but he was actually reminding Picard, saying, you can absolve yourself of not being able to prevent the fucking scariest robot monster army ever from abusing you.
And that's what I'm saying, is he told him what he needed to hear, but like he worded it in a way that was still a jab.
Yeah. Well, because he's a dickhead, right?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That was my point.
Yeah.
That was my point.
Yes, I agree with you. I think it's a great point.
I think it was great writing when they said, it's like, you're going to have to deal with this. You can either... deal with it over here or over there.
Exactly.
So just don't make your decision based upon what you think's gonna get away from that.
He made it all much clearer. Picard was trying to be all like kind of like Worf, all angsty and like, but it's like Robert was able to be like, dude, you got two choices here. Make your choice.
One last thing. I thought it was clever the way that when they were talking about the Atlantis project, how Picard was talking about using his space improv tactics to he was able to repurpose those tactics to possibly maybe like come up with an idea for the fix of the Atlantis project. I forget what harmonic resonators. Yeah. He was like, on this planet, in order to get off this planet when we were stuck there, it was one time with these aliens, we used harmonic resonators. It's not the same problem, but maybe we could. I thought it was cool.
He may have been referring to pen pals, maybe, because remember that was the girl's planet was all getting all earthquakey and stuff.
Yeah, I just
might have been pen pals.
I just like how like his travels through the stars, the writers were able to like translate into something that is practical on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
It's very cool.
Lots of things were cool. All right.
Lots of things are cool.
We did a good job, I think, Dan. I think even though Jesse weren't here, we did all right. But Jesse will be back next week when we start our coverage of...
All right. Good. Very good. Fine.
of Strange New Worlds Season 4, Episode 1, which is titled Valis... Marineris.
I'm much relieved, sir.
Which people have explained to me that this is not some sort of sauce. It's like a Latin for like a the Mariner Valley. But I thought, you know, maybe it's something you get at the Auntie Anne's pretzel if you have to pay an extra 50 cents to get the little...
Then you have the advantage.
The Valis Marineris sauce. You know what I'm saying?
They want you.
Who? Like the comedy you people mean, like, want me? Like SNL? SNL UK wants me?
You mean Ensign Mariner?
What?
I did think about that too. But yes.
Brotherly concern.
Next week we'll start our coverage of Strange New Worlds Season 4. We're excited and looking forward to that.
Good for you, Uncle.
We will be doing Where the Hell Have I Heard That Before?
I'm sorry. I have to ask one more question. What was this whole uncle-nephew thing? Because at the beginning...
It was just playful fun.
No, because I just want to... I'm sorry. Because Renee... It starts out with Renee says... Mm-hmm. Renee goes, I know who you are. Mm-hmm. Picard says, then you have the advantage. Then Renee goes, you're my nephew, Jean-Luc, from the Starship Enterprise. He's not his nephew. And then Picard like logically goes, well, then you must be my Uncle Renee. And then he goes, I'm not your uncle, silly. But like, that's a logical conclusion. If why does Renee think that Picard's his nephew, but then it's ridiculous that he would be his uncle?
Because kids are stupid. You gotta understand that. Like, even very bright, clever kids.
It's just
are kind of stupid sometimes. Yeah, they make a mistake.
It's stupid.
Yeah. Picard was just kind of like playing along.
Yeah, he was playing along because, I mean, he acted as if Picard was being the stupid one, but like, he's the one that called him his nephew first, and Picard was just responding, well, if I'm your nephew, you must be my uncle. Like, Picard was being logical. The kid wasn't following any line of logic.
I will say, it's good to point it out, but no spoilers. A couple years after this, it don't matter. So, you know.
Are you saying we're all going to die?
No, I'm just saying. Never mind. So eventually
sometimes
we'll get to...
Sometimes I even enjoy bullying you.
We'll eventually get to Star Trek Generations, where we...
The school valedictorian.
Revisit
athletic hero some of these characters. Arms raised in victory.
Good. All right. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Website is itsgotstartrek.com. Patreon is patreon.com/itsgotstartrek. You know, Facebook, YouTube, all the social medias at It's Got Star Trek. And please, if you don't mind, you know, subscribe to YouTube. It's helpful. If you write a review anywhere, write a review, let us know, send us a link, and Dan will write you a haiku from scratch. No AI. It's going to be all Dan.
Why do you walk away?
You don't even have to necessarily write a good review, but...
Valedictorian.
All right. So looking forward
prune
to
juice. Prune
next,
juice.
Next week. We'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Jean-Luc. And be careful. Have a good trip, Captain.
Maybe I'll do better next time.
Yes. 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 Okay.
I have all the specs and diagrams and form.
All right, whoever you are, I can hear you. Oh, good Lord. A highwayman.
A what?
Highwayman. It's a robber who attacks travelers, but none have been reported in this vicinity for centuries.
But I'm not a robber.
Oh. I'm much relieved, sir.
I know who you are.
Then you have the advantage.
You're my nephew, Jean-Luc, from the Starship Enterprise.
Then you must be my Uncle René.
I'm not your uncle. It's the other way around.
Too bad. I rather enjoyed the idea.